Welcome to A Path Home. This is the podcast where we demystify the tasks related to after-death care through hearing stories from people who have cared for their own deceased loved ones at home. I'm your host, Sarah Cruz. I'm the director of Heartland Prairie Cemetery, a home funeral guide, death educator, and a member of the National Home Funeral Alliance. On this episode, we hear from Walt Patrick, the steward of Herland Forest in Washington State, which is, among other things, a natural burial ground and licensed human composting facility, also called Natural Organic Reduction. And Elizabeth Fournier, a progressive funeral director and author of the Green Burial Guidebook, who often works with Walt. Longtime listeners will remember Elizabeth from two previous episodes. Today they share with us what a laying-in ceremony for a natural organic reduction entails at Herland Forest. Laying in is the first part of the process, literally placing the body in the composting cradle. To learn more about what they're doing at Herland Forest, follow the link in the show notes for the Herland Forest website. Hi, Walt. Nice to see you.
Hi there. Glad to be here.
I'm meeting you for the first time. I've known Elizabeth for a little while now, and I'm aware of some of the work that you're doing up there. So if you could tell me a little bit about yourself, and you run a natural burial ground, is that correct?
Right. That's an outgrowth of the work of the Wimbird Education and Research Center. For over 30 years, we've been studying the challenges of how do you feed, fuel, and clothe people on marginal land, how to take control of your life support system away from the system at large, how to do it on a more self-reliant, cooperative, team-based approach. And part of that is working with animals, and the animals get old and die. And so we've been doing natural organic reduction of the animals for over 30 years. And so the development of applying that same technology to humans was a very natural step for us.
And this whole idea of composting human bodies has really captured the imagination of so many through the work that they're doing at Recompose. But like you just mentioned, you've been doing this kind of all along. You've been at this for a long time and doing it in a way that is maybe less industrial.
Industrial is exactly the word I was going for. We were the first facility licensed to do human composting. I was the first person licensed to operate a human composting facility. And we were working with the cemetery board developing the rules and regulations for the year before they became legal to actually operate. So we've been in this from the fundamentals. And as Spade notes, her work is based upon the composting of large mammals. And that's what we've been doing and have long-term experience in. Mm-hmm. Then we combine it with the issue, because what we do with the animals is we use their remains to support the growth of a tree, an oak tree generally, that will then nourish their descendants.
Nice.
So the whole concept of building and using the burial to enhance and diversify the forest is a crucial part of what we do.
Mm-hmm. Tell me the name of the cemetery.
Herland Forest.
Herland.
It's a reference of a book that was published in 1915, and it's part of the canon of the feminist movement. The book was written about the idea of creating a society where food, fuel, and fiber was created from the forest instead of fossil-fueled agriculture. And that's very much what we've been doing. And so the Herland Forest is a way to, again, incorporate those principles.
So are you also harvesting the forest for making fiber?
Yep.
Very cool.
Because if I had to feed you on marginal land, and marginal land is the only land available, the premium land has already been taken up and it's very expensive. Mm-hmm. So how can we create a viable alternative? You'll hear this theme, a viable alternative to the status quo in much of what we do. How do we do that? Mm-hmm. So you may notice that the difference between theory and practice is that in theory, there's not much difference. But in practice, there's always difference. And you never know till you do it and try it. So we want to create an alternative to the funeral industrial complex, the big industrial death machine, how to do it on a hands-on basis and do it with more control, pursuing death care instead of dollar care.
Yeah, I really appreciate that.
And you can only do that if you have your basics covered. So we have land and we have gardens and we have housing and tools and all of that stuff. We built our NOR facility on site because we've got all kinds of tools. We have our own sawmill. We have our own machine shops, et cetera. And so we're able to study and develop the designs right here.
So I'm curious about when you receive a body that is going to be composted, what's the next step?
Well, we are a cemetery. Okay. I am not a licensed funeral director. So the two people who, there are two entities that have authority over preparing the body to go in. One is a licensed funeral director and the other is the family. And so we have a laying in tomorrow where the family will be transporting the body to here and will lay the body into the cradle and remove the plastic appliances and the diaper and the various other things. And they'll do all of that. If the family doesn't want to get involved, and most of them don't want to get involved at that level, then we turn to a licensed funeral director, which has traditionally been Elizabeth.
So you two have been working together for a while. You're located in rural Oregon.
We're on the other side of the river, the Columbia River. So she's on the southern side. We're on the northern side.
Okay. I'm in Oregon. He's in Washington.
Oh, okay. Good. I wasn't familiar with the geography of the Columbia River.
We're 80 miles east of Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm. When Elizabeth reached out to me, she wanted to have the two of you here together to describe what the laying in ceremony is like. And I understand that it changes depending on the family and their degree of wanting to participate or whether you're using a funeral director. But I know from talking with Elizabeth before that part of your ethos around this is that you are including the family as much as possible and, you know, bringing them along, educating families to know that they can participate fully.
Well, we try and make it as collaborative an experience as possible because that first off makes it interesting and takes it in ways and opens doors that otherwise would not be done if you were just on the clock trying to get the body done and so on. We steward 120 acres here. Mm. And so we have plenty of room. We have a 40-acre licensed campground that the families can come and stay in. We've had funerals that last 3 days. You know, we see the whole area of grief as the undeveloped need, unresponded to need in death care today. Because where time is money, there's no room for grief. And so how can we back that away and let people proceed at their own pace? For example, we have picnic tables throughout the cemetery and encourage the families to come and spend the night and spend the day and just be part of it. We're going to have a big weekend on the 23rd where we'll be planting over 3,000 tulips and daffodils in the cemetery on the graves that were done this year. And so that we try and get an inclusive situation instead of having be this separate area of the cemetery that's kind of over there. And so, no, it's part of life and it's and you're welcome and come and celebrate the love that was there and is still there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I found that just the actual physical participation in these processes can really help with that grief journey. At the beginning of it is fully engaged, going the distance and being there. And like you said, slowing things down, doing it at your own time, because not everybody can approach it at the same pace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Giving people those options.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Elizabeth, if you could describe a couple of these laying in ceremonies, I don't know if there was one in particular that you wanted to share, but how that feels and looks, and to describe it so that our listeners can have a sense of this experience.
So when you're driving to Herlin Forest, I have a 2-hour drive from where I am, and driving along the Columbia River Gorge is magnificent. It's powerful. It's amazing. It's no surprise. There's movies about it. There's songs written about it. People propose next to it. It's lovely. And then when I cross over a bridge, I'm heading up this little winding river and the Klickitat River. And it's just, I roll down the windows of, I guess I don't roll them down. We're in the new age now. I push the button, the windows go down. And I listen to the river as I drive up and I see the trees and they change almost from the seasons when you're going up in the elevation to get to Wekiakis, Washington. It always feels like such a magical, special drive. And I know the families feel that way too. There's times families follow in procession. We'll be maybe at the funeral home. We might be just taking a moment to say goodbye to somebody with visitation. Maybe they want to wrap them in a shroud just for the ceremonial aspect of that. And then there's times where I'll go ahead of time and meet up with Walt and other stewards at the cemetery to take care of some preparations. But every time I enter into the grounds of Forest, it feels really magical. There's something very sumptuous about it. This place is special. The tulips on the graves. There's a wonderful labyrinth that people are encouraged to walk. There's places where you can sit and listen to woodpeckers peck away. Actually, Walt and I did an interview with some gentlemen there for undertaking the podcast. And we all sat at a picnic bench in the forest and they said, wow, we've never done something outside before. And we could hear the fluttering of the oak leaves and we could hear the woodpeckers pecking and you could even actually hear it a little bit in the radio interview too. So when families choose this ground, I think that as soon as somebody walks in and takes a look around, they're sold. It's not even a matter of checking in on the cost. It's not even a matter of finding out all the benefits, like they could actually camp on the grave and they're encouraged to possibly grow some flowers and they can pick flowers from their own grave prior to dying and things like that, but it fits. So the natural organic reduction area, there are these wonderful handmade wood cradles and you drive up to it and it's, again, not industrial. It looks just very, just salt of the earth. When I meet up with a loved one there and we'll go ahead and go from my care into the care of Herland Forest, we take our time and talk a little bit and, you know, of course, check in on the day. And it's not a matter of I'm dropping off a body and leaving. This is a whole day. I'll go early in the morning and I'm there for hours and the conversation is beautiful. And we know the name of the individual and we know some of their story. They are placed into a bed of wood chips. And I'm sure Walt will talk a little bit more about the specifics of what's happening inside the cradle. But sometimes families have, families don't always know what it's going to look like because it's so new. There really aren't pictures online of this. There's some artistic renderings, but there isn't really true to life pictures, maybe what this looks like. And they don't really know what to expect. So a lot of times what we'll do is ask a family, would you like to be there for actually taking the individual and ushering them from the vehicle into the cradle space? Would you like to arrive a little bit later once your loved one is in the cradle and maybe they have some flowers on them, a blanket on them, they have some of the natural materials inside sort of covering them and just their faces exposed? So it looks like whatever a family wants it to look like. And what I appreciate working with Walt and Herland Forest is they have the same understanding that I do, that this is really about the family and this is really about what we did before the funeral industry became the funeral and cemetery industry. It's about breathing into the experience and allowing the family to take the lead.
How often have families done the after-death care themselves at home, perhaps wrap the body in a shroud, and then you're coming with the family and they've already had maybe a 2-3 day experience prior to showing up at the cemetery?
It's all over the board. Walt and I have had a woman who lived in downtown in Manhattan and she wanted to fly across country with gel packs, non-embalmed, picked her up from the airport in Portland. And here she was, no family present, but a sister who said, this is what she wants. She read about this on the interwebs, give her what she wants. And then we had a wonderful experience in the spring. And this was a beautiful, really unseasonably warm day. It was on a Sunday. And gosh, it was probably 70 degrees, blue sky, really unexpected. And the family had Native American roots and they wanted to assemble. They found their own space for a picnic area right above the NOR cradle. They decided that they wanted their loved one placed in ahead of time. And then they were going to have their ceremony. They were going to have their picnic. They were going to then come and spend their time visiting. And I'd love to hear Walt's take away from that day. But from what I remember so much, because it's just so vivid, there's so many things about it. The elders came. The tribal elders spoke. And they talked about the blessings of the land. And it was really powerful. And you can't really hear a pin drop in the forest, but you probably could hear that oak leaf drop because it was all eyes on them, not one teenager staring at their cell phone. It was pretty amazing. There was some drumming. And then once everybody spoke and was at peace and kind of passed the stick around the circle and gave their time, one by one, the men first and then the women lined up and then came and had a handful of soil that they came down and that was placed into the cradle while they viewed and spent time with the loved one. And while this was going, there was a drum beat following along. And it was very slow and methodical. And there was silence. It wasn't a social event. It was definitely ceremonial. And the family was very clear. This is a ceremony. This isn't a celebration because we celebrate his life, but we will miss him. So we're not celebratory today, we're ceremonial. And I thought that was a really amazing distinction to hear that from them, and I respected that greatly. And then afterwards, they decided that the family brought a whole bunch of items that belonged to this loved one, and they wanted to gift everyone who came and everybody who took their time to drive out to the forest that day. And there was wonderful woolen blankets. We have a woolen mill here in Eastern Oregon called Pendleton that's rather famous. A bunch of Pendleton products, blankets and wonderful jackets. And they gave away items. They gave me a wonderful kind of a red, really neat design pillow. And I actually have it in the royal red velvet chair in my bathroom here at the parlor. It sits there and I see that a couple times a day because I'm here for several hours a day. And they just had a lot of different items. They had artwork, everything. And it was just really special to sit around. And after we ate our ice cream sandwiches, and after people sort of sat and then broke out into some talking and socialization, nobody really wanted to leave. The air was perfect. The sunlight was perfect. The temperature of the people was perfect. And I remember we sat on these round oak logs. We sat there forever. And it wasn't taxing. It wasn't anybody looking at their watch thinking, well, we should head home now. It was just, we just were there. We were just in the moment. And it was really, I guess, magical is sort of a word that comes to mind. But how wonderful that this family could arrive not knowing what they were going to expect and have it unfold organically, exactly how they needed it to, and have them all walk away, change from the experience. But also, I wouldn't be surprised if most of them either come back or have a family member come back in the future and utilize the forest either for a natural organic reduction or for a natural burial because they really felt like it was their place and they were now a guardian of the forest.
Mm, it's really powerful.
Wonderful statement. Three things that I would add to that is one is just a little logistical point here. In the cradle, we put down a layer of wood chips. And the body goes on top of the wood chips. And then we do another layer of wood chips on top of the body. So it's kind of sandwiched in there. We basically lay the body in on natural. I mean, they go out the world like they came in that case. So what we do is we take that top layer of wood chips and lay it on the body up to chest level. And so the body's laying on a bed of wood chips and you can see the face and the hands properly positioned, and then the bottom part of the body is covered up with wood chips. And so that's give you an idea how it looks like that. Mm-hmm. So when people come up and they bring more wood chips to add in and sprinkle them in around the body, that's what they're seeing. That's what the participants are out of that.
I see.
On that day, as Elizabeth said, people just, this was in late March when this happened. And so the days were not all that long. And so they stayed until it was clear that they were moving into sundown. Mm-hmm. And so it was a natural closing of the day instead of like, well, it's 3:30. We need to get you out of here. We've got another family coming in. Right. It wasn't that. They were experiencing the natural rhythm, which I felt emphasized the naturalness of the death and what was happening. And so mm-hmm. on. So that was a cool part, I thought, out of that, just seeing the natural timing where everybody could see that the day was starting to darken. And so, yeah, it was now time to go. So I thought that was really nifty. And as the elders were standing in this big circle that we have, a huge hawk flew over and flew over the circle three times and then flew away to the north. And I was just sitting there saying, wow, you couldn't script this.
You couldn't pay for that. No, yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. Nature showing up.
Yeah. Well, we have a large resident population. Much of what we're doing with natural in our enhanced natural burial is enhancing the diversity of the forest. So there's more food for the birds and the bees. And so we are now having a growing population of wildlife in the forest, which was prior to this pretty much a desert because the lack of water restricted the diversity of the plants. And so we now have 6 resident owls overseeing the forest. We'll often have, when people are in there picking their spot, they'll often have a hawk or somebody come over and check them out and check out mm-hmm. what's going on. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty cool too.
There was a white snow owl that was there for quite a bit. Is your snow owl still there?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. That's really special. So what happens next? I'm familiar with what happens with a natural burial, an unembalmed body, biodegradable container, no vaults, put the body in the ground, cover with the soil that had been removed. Burial is something that everybody can understand. But anyway, I'd like for you to describe what happens next with the natural organic reduction, how it differs from a natural burial.
Well, people always ask, how long does it take? And the length of time is dependent upon the season. Mm-hmm. We work on the calendar. We don't work on the time clock. We want to give it the time to do the natural process rather than force the process. Somebody's doing it in a industrial warehouse where they're paying rent, et cetera. They've got to move the product along. We don't. We have 120 acres of forest, and it's why we go ahead and hold remains for a year so people can pick up the remains at a time that's convenient for them to incorporate the material into their situation. Because if somebody wants to be buried on their own land in Washington State, they may not be buried unless they're reduced. Ah. So you have to be in a licensed cemetery or else undergo the natural organic. Right. So that's the key issue. We just had a case of a woman who would sit by the picture window overlooking the bay with her mother in the morning and have a morning cup of coffee before they got on with their life. Well, now her remains are in the bushes on the other side of that window. Mm. So she still gets to come back and sit and have morning coffee with her mother in that sense. So that's an example of where natural organic reduction is really appropriate.
Yeah.
People just want to get back and become part of the biosphere. Then we've developed an enhanced natural burial process, which allows us to start growing things fairly quickly, to basically turn the grave into a huge flower pot. Mm-hmm. We have plastic pipes, 3-inch plastic pipes that go down into the grave to get oxygen down there to the digestion process so that it's converted to carbon dioxide instead of methane. And those tubes also allow us to get water down there because our limitation is the dry months of July and August and September. And so with these tubes, we can get water down to those wood chips where the water is absorbed. The wood chips act as a water battery to hold that. So there's water there to nourish the growth. And that's key to being able to get trees growing in a dryland forest.
So I'm still, I still am not grasping the difference. You've got the body placed in a cradle that already has wood chips, and then the body is covered with wood chips. Is that then covered?
No, it's sealed.
How do you seal the cradle?
First off, we're talking about an insulated coffin. And so we have a vinyl lined lid that's insulated that fits fairly tightly. And then it's lag bolted in with like 25 lag bolts to seal the whole thing together.
And does it remain above ground?
Well, that's the whole thing. Are you doing the organic reduction above ground or below ground?
I guess that's my question.
Above ground, yeah. If you're doing the above ground thing, then the cradle is sealed, and the cradle has these large wheels on both ends that allow you to roll it back and forth. It's on a huge 20-foot long rack. So one person can move the cradle back and forth. We do it about once a week.
All right. It's like turning your compost pile.
Exactly that. And it's just rigged so that anyone can do it. One of the most touching things I remember is one of our early NORs. The young man died. He was a gardener up in Spokane. And his young wife brought her 2-year-old and 4-year-old children down to visit while the body was in process. They were not there for the laying in, but they did come down to visit and spend the night and so on. And so I've got a picture of the woman rocking the cradle back and forth, because Elizabeth will tell you it's easily handled by hand. And the woman is rocking the cradle back and forth while she's holding her baby and just crying. I mean, I would have dearly loved had a picture of that, but you know, it could not intrude on the moment. But
right, but what an image!
Her being able to suddenly rock her husband's remains back and forth while her babies were there.
There are so many beautiful moments with natural burial and with this that you can't intrude. It's not the correct time to pull out a camera. And even when I ask families and say, I'll be snapping photos, and would you allow me to snap photos, and would you allow me to send these to you? And even if I get the green light and there's permission, there's still some real sensitive moments that are just tricky. And I think about my very first green burial 17 years ago, what I would have done to have photos of that to show, this is when I had no idea what I was doing, and this is how beautiful it turned out, and this is how easy it is. But I didn't even have the confidence back then to say, hey, I would like to document this for you. Are you okay with that? So there's no photos of anything.
Yeah. People often say, want to know about what happens. Well, you're an old man. What happens when you're gone on this? And well, we've got a community concept structure here. And so we want a gender balanced community. And it's important to me that the person who takes lead over after me be a woman who's called to death care and is interested in building something positive here. So right on the center of our website, we have an internship opportunity listed there. And so we're looking for that young woman who's interested in taking a leadership role to help explore this intersection between death care and grieving. Because we've got facilities for weekend campouts and gatherings and stuff to help the people. My experience is that death creates this huge hole in the fabric of a family, and people feel alone with it, when in fact they're not alone, and that there's a lot of people are feeling what they're feeling. And to bring those people together, I believe this can be very healing. Mm-hmm. So how to find that young person who wants to step aside from the selling of caskets and the big corporate world out there and wants to move in a position where we live with this. We can be giving at an interment and then go back and feed the baby goats and having working in the garden. So having that balance, because who cares for the people who are caring for the people? And I think a lot of the craziness in the modern world is because people have become so disassociated from nature. And so getting back into the association with nature is a key part of helping to do this. So how to move away from a dollar-based death care industry and how to set that up, that's the key thing. We're trying to create a viable alternative to that. And there must be people out there who are interested in that, have a passionate calling to do that, So when you find somebody like that, point them in our way, because we are looking for building the next generation to hand this off to.
Absolutely. Maybe they're listening right now.
Well, be wonderful.
Yeah. I'll include your website in the show notes so people can check there.
Thank you.
I hope I have a chance to come up and visit you sometime.
We'd love it. Yeah.
Yeah. See the space and be in the space for a while. It sounds just like a splendid place to be.
We've just added another 20 acres to the cemetery, so we're now at 40 acres. And part of our strategy is to incorporate the forests that are around Herland Forest. We take $1,000, a right of interment is $3,000, and we take $1,000 of that and put it into a land acquisition fund so we can protect the adjoining forest. So that's something we're exploring about how to make the interment of human remains is a way to protect and save the forest.
That's fantastic. Thanks so much. Great to meet you.
It's been fun. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
A Path Home is a production of the National Home Funeral Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating and advocating for communities and families who choose to care for their own loved ones at death. Check out our website at homefuneralalliance.org. If you like this podcast, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. If you would like to share your home funeral or natural burial experience on the podcast, please email me at podcast@homefuneralalliance.org. We'd love to hear from you. The music at the beginning and end of A Path Home is written and performed by Sarah Cruz. Our beautiful cover art is by Linda Curray. And until next time, remember the words of Ram Dass. We are all walking each other home.
I want to be there to walk you home. I'll tend to your body, you'll tend to my soul. And if it happens,